Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
We've got nearly 50 colleges and universities in the province of Ontario, and they're all screaming for more money. It's a complicated problem. They say the province doesn't fund them enough. They say the feds cost them nearly $2 billion by cutting back on visas for foreign students who pay six or seven times the tuition of Canadian students. And the province has frozen tuition fees for the past 5 years and will do so for another three, which will deprive the post-secondary sector of even more money. What should we do? Fortunately, we have some free advice at this table. So let's welcome Peggy Sattler. She's the New Democrat MPP for London West. Adil Shamji, he's the Liberal MPP for Don Valley East. Mike Schreiner, leader of the Green Party of Ontario and the MPP for Guelph. And Alex Usher, president of Higher Education Strategy Associates, one of the country's foremost experts on the post-secondary world. And for the record, we did invite a representative of the Progressive Conservative government to join our little confab here, but they declined to respond to our requests. So that's why they're not here. But we're glad that you are. So thanks, everybody, for coming. Alex, to you right away. The government made an announcement a week ago that they were going to inject $1.3 billion into the post-secondary sector to recognize the financial difficulties everybody's having. That sounds like a lot of money. Is it?
It covers inflation for the next 3 years, and that's about all it does. So about a million, technically, I think about $700-800 million is for operating grants. There's a bunch of special purpose grants, and then there's a $200 million fund, which sounds like it's application-based, to compensate people for lost revenue from international students.
So the colleges and universities would have to apply for that money.
And they say they will give it to the neediest of the, and it's not clear how they're going to judge that. And it's, are we talking total dollars? Are we talking percentage of dollars? And I suspect that that funding is not all coming, may not come this year. So we don't know how the numbers are being rolled out. I suspect it's actually back-end loaded rather than front-end loaded. But if you just say, $400 million a year, a little over $400 million a year for 3 years, yeah, that's a little bit more than inflation. And so it means that we won't get, the per student funding isn't going to get any worse, but it's still going to remain 10th out of 10, as it has been for nearly all of the last 40 years.
10th out of 10 provinces in terms of per student funding.
Yeah.
Peggy Sattler, how do you look at that $1.3 billion injection of money?
Well, the province had just gone through an exercise to appoint an expert blue ribbon panel to make some recommendations on how to deal with the sustainability of the sector to ensure colleges and universities have the funding that they need. That panel made what some people describe as a very modest recommendation that a minimum of $2.5 billion is needed in increased government operating grants.
So we're a little over halfway there with this.
Yeah, and plus that panel had also recommended that there be additional revenues for colleges and universities through increased tuition. So what the government has offered is much less than that Blue Ribbon panel had advised, and it doesn't take into account the federal decision on the international student
the
cap, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Adil Shamji, your view.
As is so typical of this government, they provide a little bit to everyone, but never enough for anyone. This is too little, too late. We're dead last in the country for funding post-secondary education, dead last for funding operating. We're dead last for contributing provincial GDP, contributing from our provincial GDP to post-secondary education. We have, an unprecedented situation. 10 of, 23 public universities reporting deficits right now. We have one university with many thousands of their staff on strike. This is a drop in the bucket. And at the same time, for as much as the premier might say that he's got the backs of students, not a single dollar is going towards OSAP in the midst of an affordability crisis.
The student assistance plan.
Exactly. It's simply inadequate. It misses the mark entirely.
Mike Schreiner, your view.
Well, I think the premier and his minister needs to go back to college and university to study math because their math doesn't add up. I mean, first of all, as Peggy said, the Blue Ribbon panel said $2.5 billion over 3 years. They gave 1.2, half of that. That was before the federal government made their decision to cap international students. That's going to cost universities $1.8 billion. So the $400 million per year over the next 3 years is like 20% of just dealing with the cost of the international student cap. Ontario, as my colleagues have said, ranked last of all provinces. If we want to even get up to the national average, that would be funding of around $7 billion. So it doesn't add up, and it's hurting our students, it's hurting our economy, and it's hurting our post-secondary education sector.
You referenced the federal visa situation, and let's get into that right now, because that will deprive the post-secondary system, cutting back on the number of foreign students, by $1.8 billion, as you suggested, Mike. So, Alex, next question becomes, was that the right move for the feds to take, given the impact it's about to have on 47 colleges and universities across this province?
I'm not sure how what other choices they had, to be honest with you. I mean, colleges in particular, Ontario colleges in particular, got greedy over the last 2 or 3 years, and they brought in more students. And yes, originally, for some of them, that was about, you know, making up for government cutbacks. There's no question that the amount of money coming in from international students vastly exceeded what was cut from the budget for colleges. So, you know this, you're from that part of the, yeah. From Conestoga's part of the world where they went from 11,000 to 33,000 students, and you see what that did to the housing market. I think Mark Miller went out and was pretty consistent for about 6 months and saying, guys, I'm going to do this.
The federal
don't
immigration
make me do
minister.
This. Yes, Mark Miller, the federal immigration minister, said, don't make me do this, and everybody ignored him. They just assumed he couldn't do it. And we have the situation we have. I think you can say, you know, the all these international students are they're kind of an externality of governments not paying for funding. Mm-hmm. They said, look, you can't get money from domestic students. We're not going to give you money. The only place you can go and get money are international students. You can bring in more of them. You can charge them more money. And that's how the system has been working for the last 12 years.
But now you can't do that.
And now you can't do that.
So. Okay. Now, I know Conestoga is not in either of your ridings.
Well, partly in my riding.
It's partly in your riding?
Yeah, they have a Guelph campus. Yep.
Oh, they've got a Guelph campus. That's right. Okay. Yeah. They've got 30,000 30,000 foreign students. Is that appropriate?
Yeah, I think that's too high. And I think most of the colleges sector would agree. The unintended consequence of the Ford government vastly underfunding our post-secondary sector is they desperately had to find revenue somehow. They went after international students. One of the unintended consequences of that, making the housing crisis worse. I mean, there's some infamous stories in Guelph of 30, 40 students lined up to view one highly overpriced apartment. People are so desperate to get housing. So, you know what? The Ford government, they've made the housing crisis worse because they made the post-secondary budget crisis worse.
Western is in London. You represent London. Huron University College is in London. You represent London.
Fanshawe,
of course,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've heard lots of stories about foreign students packing 10, 15 people into a single apartment because that's all they can get. Do you hear those stories?
Yeah, and actually there was a very tragic incident in London of some international students who were in an unregulated, very unsafe rooming house, essentially. Mm-hmm. Without the proper exits, and they died in a fire. It is shameful what has happened in our system. But let's not forget that when the Ford government came in and decided to reduce tuition and then freeze tuition, it created what has now become almost a $2 billion revenue hole for colleges and universities. And Ford was happy to encourage colleges and universities to make up for that loss of revenue with international student tuition. You know, he opened the door to more of these public-private partnerships. There were six when he was elected, which were supposed to be phased out. There's now 15 of those among our 24 colleges. And he actively encouraged institutions to deal with years of underfunding, the loss of tuition dollars, by aggressive recruitment of international students.
Well, this does raise a question on the other side of the coin, which is, since we're not getting the provincial funding that everybody around this table seems to think we need, since the number of Fordham students is going to be cut back and therefore that revenue is going to be denied, since tuition is still going to be frozen for the next 3 years, so there's going to be no uptick in revenue there, do we have to look at other more radical solutions? As in, Adil Shamji, do we have to close some colleges and universities because they're no longer sustainable under the current funding situation?
I would certainly hope not. I mean, if you look back on this province's proud history, we have been at the forefront of research, innovation, development. Our colleges and universities used to be the economic engine and powerhouse of our province and of the country. We need to be leaning into that. We need to be investing in that. Education always provides a return on investment. And as we see an affordability crisis, a labor market shortage, the solution to that isn't in education, is not in shortchanging the education of future generations. The reality is that the formula is very clear. We know exactly how the post-secondary sector was performing before Doug Ford, and we can see what it's doing after Doug Ford. Cutting OSAP, cutting operating budgets, capping the number of students that are getting funded.
Well, let me jump in here, because sure. Even when Dalton McGuinty and Kathleen Wynne were running the show, Liberal governments, Ontario was still, they were still 10th out of 10, weren't they?
Or maybe briefly 9th under McGuinty. But the freeze on new money to institutions started in 2014. It did start
exactly,
under Wynne.
Which was under
the
Wynne
government preferred to spend money on students than on institutions. And that is where that starts.
Everybody's got some dirt on their hands here is my point.
Well, let's not forget at the same time we had some of the most generous student and OSAP funding at the time. I mean, in 2018, you know, until Doug Ford came in, not only did we have heavy investments in OSAP, we even had a debt-free tuition program to make sure people from the lowest socioeconomic backgrounds had access to the post-secondary education that they need and deserve to get out of a poverty trap.
Okay, but Alex, I really want to hit this on the head, which is, would you sit here today and say that we can afford to sustain and maintain a post-secondary system in this province that has 47 colleges and universities plus all their accompanying satellite campuses as well? Can we do that?
Of course we can.
Of course we can.
So, I mean, it's a choice to spend as little as Ontario does. It's not a choice any other province in the country makes. I think the worrying thing for me is that the underfunding of post-secondary is so pan-partisan. It has been 40 years. It was 10th under 10 for most of the Liberal reign. It was 10th out of 10 under the NDP in the 1990s. Ontarians don't like spending money on post-secondary education.
Why not?
I haven't the faintest clue. But it does seem to be, it's such an obvious observation when you look at the pattern of post-secondary funding for the last 30, 40 years. And I understand that it was a great student aid system. It's still not a bad student aid system. But it's the politics of spending money on students rather than institutions, and you've seen that at the federal level. I think the federal Liberals tend to have the same kind of view, and it worries me. It's been worrying me for 10 or 15 years now. It's been a pattern all the way across. I can't see a single provincial government that doesn't prefer students over institutions right now. They just happen to be starting from a higher base of institutional funding.
Mike Schreiner, do we have to shut something down because we don't have enough money to sustain what we've got?
I don't think so. I think we have to look at spending priorities. We spend $7 billion a year in this province, being the only jurisdiction in North America to directly subsidize electricity prices. We spend $5 billion on post-secondary education. Why do people who make over $100,000 a year get a 25% rebate on their electricity bill? I think they can afford it. And that money could be redirected into our post-secondary education system. It's a matter of priorities.
I ask the treasurer that every year. You know that, eh?
I know you do.
Every year that the treasurer's on this show at budget time, I say, what are you spending $7 billion helping me pay my hydro bill for? Doesn't have a good answer yet.
He doesn't have a good answer.
No.
Why don't we cap that focus those subsidies on low and middle income households and redirect some of that money into post-secondary education.
Now, I appreciate that we're, you know, I'm not saying should we shut down Western. No, we're not going to shut down Western. But there are some institutions in this province that are barely hanging on, and there are lots more running deficits this year in fashions that have not been seen before in this province. Can we sustain the current system?
It is a matter of do we value public education or do we value post-secondary education? Do we understand the benefits that we collectively get from having a strong post-secondary system? And we saw with Laurentian, the impact of the situation at Laurentian, the impact that had on the local community. Post-secondary institutions, colleges and universities are anchor institutions in those mm-hmm. communities, especially those smaller rural northern communities. They are a source of tremendous employment, cultural activities, economic drivers. They connect with local employers. So there are huge benefits from having a strong college and university sector. And the government has to recognize that. And they have to make the investment necessary to keep those institutions functioning.
The reference to Laurentian you made is the fact that the university basically
declared bankruptcy
a few years ago.
Yeah. And the ripple
effects. They lost
effects,
a lot of students after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the ripple. And the community, like small businesses, you know, lost a lot of customers. The local employers lost a lot of workers. So it has a huge ripple effect throughout the economy.
Adele, I do talk to people in the system, not as many as Alex, but I do talk to people who will say, sotto voce, off camera, of course our system's too big. Of course we've got colleges and universities that are not sustainable and we should shut them down. But no politician's going to allow that because it looks bad. Why don't we just face facts here and, you know, do what we have to do? It sounds like we're just afraid to do what has to be done.
I mean, the thing that has to be done is to adequately fund our post-secondary institutions.
But that doesn't seem to be an option. Hasn't been for 40 years. So if the option is not more money, what's the other alternative?
I guess I reject the premise of that question. I don't understand why that investment isn't seen as worthwhile. I mean, apart from being a politician, I'm a physician, wouldn't be here were it not for the support of the province, the support of the taxpayers through OSAP and grants and all of those kinds of things. I didn't come from a wealthy background, but now I'm in a position where I'm able to give back. I would hope that people believe that me and people like me are delivering a return on investment. And there are people like that across the post-secondary university sector, the college sector. We have an ambition to build 1.5 million homes by 2031. We don't have enough people in the trades. We need colleges to be graduating people that can do our plumbing and our welding and our carpentry. We're not going to meet the health human resource crisis, the housing crisis, the affordability crisis, the labor market shortage by shortchanging the education system.
In which case, Alex, okay, let's find out what we can't. If we're not prepared to put $7 billion into the post-secondary system, as seems to be the need, if this government is not prepared to take the freeze off tuitions to allow that money to come in, if the feds are insisting fewer foreign students, therefore that money's not available either, what are your options at this stage?
So it sort of depends. So the financial hit is not going to fall equally across institutions, right? It's going to hit colleges more than universities. And by and large, it's going to hit northern colleges more than others because they were more dependent on these PPPs in Toronto.
PPPs?
The public-private partnerships with the arrangements they had with private colleges in the greater Toronto area. So this is a northern crisis. It's actually not, I don't think it's going to hit the southern institutions. And so the ones you got to worry about are places like Sioux College, Northern, fewer than 1,000 students. They've been teaching 6,000 or 7,000 students from India mainly in Toronto the last few years so they can take the profits from that and serve their catchment areas. It's really hard to serve the North. Like one of the big things that Canadians don't talk about is how difficult it is to provide educational services in the North because you just don't have the class sizes that you require in order. So I take your point about there's lots of institutions It's actually more that there are every institution tries to do a lot of different programs. And what you're going to see over the next 6 months, 18 months, is you're going to see a lot of program closures. Mm-hmm. Northern's not going to close. It might not have as many programs. And, you know, I've heard Sioux College apparently they suspended their intake of their social work for until next January. There's a lot of programs that don't make, it's not just that the international students give a general subsidy. It's that there are certain programs that no longer make financial sense if you take the international students out of them. Used to be you could have, you know, you could make a go with 20 students in that program. Suddenly you got 12, can't do it anymore. And that's what's going to, it's that you're, there will be dozens, there will be hundreds of program closures across the province, I think. At the universities, you know, you probably won't see program closures. What you'll see is fewer courses offered. They won't have as many electives. Your class sizes will go up. The, you know, mental health and those kinds of social services that you expect, that we have expected the last few years at universities, will be worse. Like, it will be just, you know, a general immiseration of the system.
Okay, well, let me try this with you, Mike Schreiner, and that is, I had a little, again, off the record, in the corridors kind of a chat with a progressive conservative MPP this past week, wouldn't come on the program, but did say the following. Have you checked the salaries that university presidents make? Have you checked what provosts make? Have you checked what faculty make? And they've got tenure to boot. Surely there's some money to be saved in that. Surely the universities could cut back on that. Is that an option?
Well, I mean, if you actually look at what a lot of universities and colleges are starting to do now is they're contracting out faculty. So the number of faculty who are tenured, the number of people in those, you know, higher priced positions are actually diminishing and class sizes are going up. And I actually want to go to Alex's point. Like, when you start talking about cutting social worker programs mm-hmm. from northern colleges, that means communities in the north will have fewer access to social workers. Mental health workers. I mean, the reason we had a northern medical school because of a shortage of doctors in the north. So it's going to have real implications for communities. And so, you know, one of the things I'm hearing, especially from students, is they're having fewer and fewer classes taught by full-time faculty because universities and colleges mm-hmm. simply don't have the money to hire full-time faculty anymore.
Okay, but Peggy, I'm going to follow up with you on this. Algoma University, Sault Ste. Marie, it's got a Toronto campus. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Well, the whole, I mean, as I said, when the Ford government came in, they were very happy to allow international student tuition dollars to subsidize the delivery of post-secondary education. And Algoma has done that, recognizing that international students are much more likely to come to the Toronto campus of Algoma University rather than to go to the Sioux. And Algoma has you know, raised a lot of revenue to support the institution in the Sioux. But it's not sustainable. You can't run a system like this. And this whole crisis, you know, there's been lots of flags that have been raised, starting with David Trick when he was focused specifically on the public-private partnerships that the colleges were getting into. He did a report in 2017 recommending that they be phased out. We've had a number of Auditor General reports in Ontario about the over-reliance within the public mm-hmm. colleges on international student tuition. We had a report from the auditor, similarly with the university sector, after the Laurentian bankruptcy. And she pointed out the over-reliance on international student tuition across the sector and the risks this creates, because you don't know when that international student tuition dollars are going to disappear, as we are experiencing right now in this province.
Alex, I'll put that to you. That would be one institution of many that have relationships outside their jurisdiction. Algoma University's got a Toronto campus. Does that make sense?
Well, again, that was their attempt to escape the North. They tried to, I mean, they've got, I'm trying to remember how many programs they have, 20 or 30 programs that they're offering in Sault Ste. Marie. How do you run a university like that? Now, they used to be part of Laurentian. Like, I think we go back again. This is an example. This is going back. I think that was McGuinty period, you know, they said Algoma's going to be a separate institution. And then under the Tories, they said, well, Hearst is going to be a separate institution. I mean, there has been this sort of picking away at Laurentian. There's this sort of a weird thing around nobody can quite figure out how to run higher education in Northern Ontario in a way that is financially sustainable. And I think, you know, most places around the world, you have extra money that's there for rural and remote campuses. And Ontario does too. Ontario has a northern bonus to institutions, so they do get a little bit of extra money, but it's quite clearly nothing like what they need in order to serve, you know, it's the same story with how do you provide hospital coverage in small towns. It's all the same kinds of questions that get asked about serving thinly populated parts of the province, and Northern Ontario is pretty big and not that populated.
Okay, we got a few minutes left here. I want to touch on one more thing, and that is the freeze. There's a tuition freeze, has been for 5 years, will be for another three. I know no politician at this table is going to say, sure, we should take the freeze off and make students pay more and their parents pay more, because that's probably an unpopular thing to do. But the Blue Ribbon Panel recommended it. So should we do it?
Well, when you read the Blue Ribbon Panel report, it says, it recommends, you know, a 5% increase, and then it says something very important afterwards, associated with substantial investments in student supports and funding. And at a time when we are in an absolutely unprecedented affordability crisis, it doesn't make sense to be providing more money to the students than provide that money to the universities. Skip the middleman, deliver that funding to the universities and to the colleges, and don't put that additional stress on the students who really should be focusing on the one thing that counts, their education.
Got it. Mike Schreiner, your view, can you let tuition rise a little bit?
Not until the government fixes the cuts they made to the Ontario Student Assistance Program. They cut $1 billion from it, Steve. It's been one of the largest cuts they made in their very first budget, and it's only gotten worse. So until they restore that funding and convert more of the loans to grants, then no. If they fix OSAP, then we can talk about it.
Peggy, how about you?
Well, let's remember that under the Liberals, Ontario students at the undergraduate level and university were paying higher tuition than in any other province. So the decisions that the Ford government made in 2019 have taken Ontario down a couple of notches, but Ontario students are still paying well above the national average in terms of university tuition. I think we're like third or maybe fourth, but very high compared to other provinces. Mm-hmm. So Ontario students are contributing to their post-secondary education. We are in a cost of living crisis in this province. AREA, the Ontario Real Estate Association, released a report in the fall where they said that student debt is the biggest barrier to new home ownership for young people in this province. Young people are graduating from college and university with significant debt burden. It's causing them to delay all kinds of decisions like buying a new home, starting a family, and they're leaving the province. So we cannot burden students with additional student debt. We have to replace the funding that was removed from OSAP. But the biggest mistake that the Ford government made was when they made that reduction in the freeze to tuition, they did not replace it. And so that is what has caused such significant stress on colleges and universities. It's now up, I think it's $2 billion accumulated over those 5 years.
Alex, I'm going to give you the last word on this. Do you think tuition, well, let's ask this first. What percentage of the cost of educating a post-secondary student does the student actually pay in tuition? I know when
A domestic student?
Yeah, domestic.
It depends on the field of study. If you're in arts right now, you're probably paying about 40 cents on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar. If you're a domestic student, mm-hmm. It's less than that in most of the other faculties.
In your view, in terms of policy, not the politics of the possible, but in terms of policy, should it be higher?
With a good student aid system, yes. I mean, look, we're 25% off where tuition was 5 years ago. I mean, that's in real dollars. That's the size of the cut. The idea that you know, the tuition is skyrocketing, like it's just not true, right? Like we're going backwards, and we're going backwards fast. And I think by the end of these 3 years, Ontario will be below the national average, because we are, I believe we're seventh this year, and it's falling fast because everybody else is rising. So, you know, and debt has not really gone up in about 20 years. It's stayed at about, average debt is about 30,000. So, you know, you don't want those numbers to go up, right? But there's not some kind of increasing crisis that we have to worry about. I agree with what everyone has said about improving, you know, bringing back some of the student aid measures. We don't need to bring back all of them, because the feds have come in and they've started increasing spending. So actually now it would cost less to get back to where we were in 2018 with the Ontario Student Aid Plan. So, I mean, that's the answer. There's a lot of money to be gained on tuition, which I think we can unlock with a moderate amount of student aid spending.
I thank all four of you for coming into TVO tonight and giving all this free advice to the Ministry of Colleges and Universities. I'm sure they're, with rapt attention, going to read all of your comments. Thanks to Peggy Sattler, the MPP for London West, Mike Schreiner, the leader of the Greens and MPP for Guelph. On the other side of the table, Adil Shamji, the MPP for Don Valley East, Alex Usher, President, Higher Education Strategy Associates. Good job, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.